Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Darren, we got a lot of SummerSlam developments, things that we kind of thought would happen, getting more official, including a path for Becky Lynch to get at Trish, officially Finn Balor challenging Seth Rollins, officially Brock Lesnar accepting the challenge of Cody. Am I forgetting anything that got solidified also?
Those were the big ones. I'm kind of the Rhea Ripley title match. That's a little up in the air. That didn't get solidified, although it looks like Raquel has a knee injury. I was thinking maybe they're leaning towards her and Liv, perhaps.
Yeah, either Liv is going to be sacrificed between now and SummerSlam, and Raquel will be healed by then and get the shot. Or, yeah, they go with Liv in the meantime. But, you know, I mean, I guess I'll kind of start with this. I think Finn Balor is having a really successful summer as a character. I don't think people think he's going to beat Seth, but man, are they getting closer to making that seem possible and certainly making him seem like a worthy opponent who's going to have a good match with Seth. There's a backstory. It's personal. It's intense. I liked in the sit-down interview that Balor interrupted that Seth kind of left the zany character and got serious, you know, with a slower cadence and a more serious tone. In response to Balor. And Balor has just been, I wrote in my report at pwtorch.com during the show, he's risen to the occasion. Like, this is as inspired and as intense and as credible as I can remember him being in a long time in WWE. So, you know, I mean, they don't need to headline Seth's title match with something that's going to sell out Ford Field. The big matches are Cody Lesnar and Roman J. And so it doesn't make sense to give away like the biggest Seth match you can when you have, even though it's SummerSlam, because you have a loaded lineup, but you want a good one. And I think, and I would have been skeptical of this a couple months ago, I think Finn Balor qualifies. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I'm feeling real good. When he first started with the Judgment Day, I was like, well, he's just a background guy now, and, you know, that's his lot now. But if, with this, I mean, he's slowly – Over the course of how long they've been together, I guess the last year or so, he's been rising, as you said, rising to the occasion. And this interview tonight with the backstage locker room promo, I mean, he was so intense and believable. He's really growing into that role. And this is something where they've had, I guess this is their third or fourth rematch or whatever. We would normally be tired of this, but no, I think they have a lot of material that they can still go through, and the match last time was really good. I'm really looking forward to this. He's not done as a challenger. I mean, they could go beyond even SummerSlam with this feud, because there's a lot of material still to go with. And I was really impressed with Balor tonight. That was one of my big takeaways of this whole show.
Yeah. Now, to me, as much as I'm complimenting it, I think it would be a bit of a challenge to get another match out of this feud, unless it's like a Raw TV match where they just want to kind of have a rematch of SummerSlam next week on Raw. I could see them doing that. I don't think they could bring it all the way to a pay-per-view. But you know, they could do that. Kind of a, you know, yeah, a situation where, oh, we just headlined SummerSlam with it, or, you know, it was one of the co-headlines. We'll try to get a rating out of it. But I think it'd be a challenge to get beyond that. But, I mean, since Balor has surprised me, let's go down that road. Is it possible Balor wins and they actually do a Seth rematch to regain the title after SummerSlam and Balor actually has a run with the title? There is something about cleansing the title of not having had a title change but only being won in a tournament that appeals to me, where there's an actual, you know, one or two title changes where now it's more than just a guy who won a tournament parading around with a belt, a new belt.
I could absolutely see them changing that belt at SummerSlam. And that's another way, if they wanted to extend that feud and they have some creative direction, that's a perfect way to do it. You have a rematch at whatever the following pay-per-view is at SummerSlam, after SummerSlam. That's the way you could absolutely do it. And the way that Balor's just on fire. I mean, he would make a very credible champion, and that would change the dynamics within the Judgment Day also. So he can, with him and Priest and all that, so he could play off of that as well. That adds an additional storyline to that.
Yeah. Do you agree with me that it was good seeing Seth in that zone? And is there a way when he leaves the kind of, you know, raspy voice, whatever flamboyant thing he's going for, when he leaves that and gets serious, does I use this example a lot from ECW, the original ECW Flyboy Rocko Rock. He had this jovial side, and then boom, he'd flip the switch and get street tough and sinister. And Seth kind of channeled that a little bit. The criticism of Seth's character in a lot of circles wouldn't go away, but it would lighten up if we saw that side of him a little bit more of, you know, the Joker thing where it's like, ha ha ha, I can laugh and tell jokes, and then you cross me and now I'm going to make you, shake in your boots with just a turn in mood, a turn in facial expression, a turn in tone. And I'd like him to lean more into that. I mean, I think there's, you know, some Joker inspiration in this character. I'd like to see him go down that road a little bit more.
Sure. The more serious Seth is the best Seth, and that played out tonight. That's, I mean, you take away all the little cackling and all that stuff, and the much more serious, he's a guy you can take serious that you want to see main event. And sure, he still had on like the ridiculous outfit and everything like that. So yes, you can play up that entertainment, the sunglasses and all that. But when it's getting down to business, that's where the money is. And Seth, that's what I believe. And they got to keep going in that direction. And this was a big step in going towards that direction.
Yeah, yep, I agree. Was there an alternative for Seth? He ran down some of the other challengers that are out there. He mentioned Drew McIntyre, Gunther, Damian Priest. I mean, when I look at the lay of the land, and someone goes, you know, if they haven't been paying attention, or they just disagree with us and think Balor, even if they've been watching, they don't think Balor's SummerSlam worthy, and they're not where you and I are on this as a Balor rising to the occasion. Was there another option? I mean, it's easy to say no. If Balor went down with an injury 6 weeks ago, they would have found someone. You know, it's sort of unfair to say they don't have another option because they haven't booked another option. They haven't told that story. But who would that have been if not Balor? Would it have been Priest?
Perhaps. And I'm sitting back because I think we kind of discussed that before. There, everybody else kind of has a dance partner. So of what was left, I think Finn was just the best option of what was left. I mean, you can't really, you did Dominic already, and Priest, I think it might be a little bit early for that. And so you certainly could go in that direction. So I guess the best thing to do was to, get behind Balor, and that has certainly worked.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And is the Judgment Day being overexposed just right? Or do you say bring on even more? They are, you know, I said Balor's kind of a surprise of the summer. I think they're the surprise of the summer collectively. Rhea Ripley, I thought, had a really good night. Dominic had another really good night. He's got a big match tomorrow night going after the North American title from Wesley on NXT, and they hyped that during the show. Damian Priest is in a different and better place as a character than I've seen him before in WWE. So to me, I'm for the amount of TV time that they're getting. And I think they're earning that TV time, and I think they're all growing, and there's a chemistry that I don't think anybody expected there to be with these four, if you go all the way back to when Edge was part of it. How are you feeling about that, the Judgment Day as a group at this point, as they continue to be a huge factor on Raw?
There was a point when I was just sick of Judgment Day. You hear that music, and I was like, oh, it was TV for me because I was just sick of seeing them. But they have – really the last couple of months just all grown, all four of them. We talked about Balor and Rhea, just, I mean, every appearance she's just growing more confident, and crowds are just really into her. And of course we talked about Dominic, and again, he's main eventing again and was not out of place in that main event, and just continuing his growth and Priest is stepping up as well. I mean, the Bad Bunny thing helped elevate him, and he stayed up there. I mean, he was pulling out like that Rana off the top. His in-ring, yes. his costuming, everything is a notch above what he was doing. So I'm not sick of him. And I'm the most surprised person to say that, because I was really just – I was done with the Judgment Day. But they have earned all their TV time and accolades. So I give them props.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, they're getting so much TV time. I would expect to be hearing a backlash, and we're not hearing a backlash by email or phone calls. I'm not seeing it on the time I spend on social media. WWE is, sellout crowd tonight that they were touting on TV. Really good crowds overall. SummerSlam's on its way to being a pretty full Ford Field. WrestleTix is chronicling it one after thousands more than they did in that same arena on the previous visit. A lot's going right, and it's not just the Bloodline. You know, people don't expect to see the Bloodline on Raw. They know better, and yet they're still turning out. And some of that is, obviously Cody, too, who we'll talk about in a moment. Let's go ahead and pause and formally introduce ourselves and the show, and then get on and phone calls and emails. We are expecting to hear from an on-site correspondent in a few minutes also. Chris is expected to – let me see. He just emailed. He'll be calling in just a few minutes too. So we'll hear from Chris, who was in the arena. Just confirm that in the inbox here. So a lot to get to. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 17th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, chronicling professional wrestling every week from an insider perspective since before the internet was something that people had access to. And now, of course, we're on the internet with pwtorch.com. Tons of updates, insider news updates. I'm trying to get news that you're not going to find anywhere else, or insight into news you're not going to find anywhere else on pwtorch.com. I'm often breaking those details earlier on VIP exclusive content, either in the newsletter or more often on the Wade Keller Hotline. Today I had some backstage observations on how Bayley was doing after her knee injury at the house show on Saturday. We've had scoops on CM Punk and his locker room reputation. We've had minute-by-minute numbers on the trends for Collision for the Joe Punk match compared to the original FTR Juice and Jay match, and on and on. So be sure you're checking out pwtorch.com on a regular basis and making sure that you're caught up and not just relying on the aggregator sites, who sometimes make a mountain out of a molehill when it comes to blowing certain asides from other reporters out of proportion. So we try to avoid that, and we're proud of the work we're doing, so check that out. I also put up a Keller's take earlier today analyzing Collision so far and with some insight into what's going on strategically behind the scenes with Collision, who's booking it, who's involved in the show, what are we seeing that's deliberate versus happenstance in terms of the tone of the show, and also my just overall editorial thoughts on the direction of Collision compared to Dynamite. So check that out if you haven't yet. Also, we're really picking things up in terms of some of those aspects of the site right now. We are here, though, to talk about Monday Night Raw, although, Darren, I want to take a few minutes later to talk about Impact Slammiversary. One of their bigger pay-per-views from this past weekend, Saturday night, head-to-head with Collision, in fact. So the other voice you've heard so far on the show is Darren Lilly. He covers Impact Wrestling every Thursday night for pwtorch.com and podcasts on it, and also covers their pay-per-views. Darren, welcome to the Coles Chair. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We'll just tease it. A thumbs up in the middle or down for Impact's pay-per-view last weekend?
Oh, it was a thumbs up, definitely.
Yeah. We'll have full details, or not, I shouldn't say full details, but some comments on that. Full details, if anyone wants it, is on pwtorch.com, or the ad-free version for members at pwtorchvip.com. All right. And your podcast with John Laszlo is up too for VIP members, VIP exclusive, nearly an hour of discussion about the latest happenings and in Impact. So I want to encourage everybody who's listening to call us. If you want to be part of the show, we'd love to hear what you think about anything we've said so far or anything from Raw. The number to call is 347-215-8558. Slower is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. Another way to be part of the show is to email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Okay, I think that covers the in-house stuff in the introduction, so let's begin with our first phone call. Then we'll go to Brad in New York, or Brad in Florida, formerly of New York. You are up earlier than usual tonight. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Raw?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Darren. Thanks for having me on. I thought, you know, tonight's show was very, you know, mid. The ending match was great, in my opinion. Like, it was great. But you know how I knew that Damian and Dom were not going to win? I knew it because when I see all of those belts that Sammy and Kevin continue to carry around, I'm saying to myself, how is Damian Priest going to carry around a briefcase and two of these belts? There's no way they're winning. There's no way. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I do not understand with all of the title reveal. You know, we changed Asuka's title. We changed Roman's title. We gave Seth a brand new belt. We gave Rhea a brand new belt. Why are they still carrying around two championships if every match is for the Undisputed anyway? I don't understand it. It's driving me kind of crazy.
Darren, address Brad's angst.
I just think it's probably low on their list of priorities right now. But, yes, those the belts that look like a nickel, yeah, those, they do need to get rid of those. I do agree, but I just think it's low on the priority list for them.
I wouldn't say that I thought there was going to be a title change tonight at all, but I think if Priest had too much gold and silver to carry, or metal briefcase to carry around, he'd just have, you know, Ripley help or Dom help. It would actually be kind of, you know, interesting, and they're not playing it up at the moment, but have Priest go, you know, Finn, help me help carry all these things that all these trophies that I have, you know, and Finn's got none heading into SummerSlam, and it's sort of like, yeah, you got to carry my luggage because I've got all these belts and you're going to try to win one at SummerSlam. I mean, I don't know, Brad. I think there's ways to work around that and actually turn what seems like a barrier logistically into an asset.
Yeah, I hear you. It's just like, I don't know. Every time I see, I could imagine like Kevin and Sammy being like, what a pain in the ass it is to carry these things around all the time. It's just,
yes,
whatever. You know what I mean? It's just such a pain. But regardless, like, watching the Becky Lynch segment, and I know it wasn't like the most important thing of the night, but like, I really feel like she's lost her luster with the crowd. I mean, I just feel and see a lack of enthusiasm for her. And I feel like she's much better with a championship. Like, Bianca, I feel the exact opposite about. I feel like Bianca's better chasing a championship. Like, I feel like Bianca's more interesting now than she was when she had the belt. But I feel like Becky, like, is better with a championship. And I just, did you guys feel, and have you been feeling like, but I really felt it especially tonight, like, there's something either not there or missing or lacking with Becky. And, you know, I don't know if it's this feud or I don't know if it's something else, but I just didn't feel like the crowd even cared, you know?
Sure. I know what you're saying. I think there's certain wrestlers who just seem like if they aren't in the title picture, if they're not the champion even, it just doesn't feel right. I've said that about Drew McIntyre before. I don't know that his character works if he's not the alpha of the brand as nearly as well. Like, some people can blend in and you know, be in different positions of the card. Charlotte feels that way. And yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that with Becky. I think they're trying to, you know, have it both ways. I think they think, well, I don't know if that's the right way to put it. They want concurrently Becky as the top star, but they want to be building up Rhea Ripley as the dominant champion and you know, have those two cross paths later. Darren, how do you feel about what Brad had to say?
I feel like Becky lost momentum when she came back because they changed her character, and then I didn't think the feud with Bianca did her any favors. And also kind of what's going on is a little bit of the CM Punk syndrome. Her character works best when she's rallying against something, rallying against the system perhaps. and that hasn't really been the focus of her feud. So if you could set up some kind of storyline where the fans want to get on her side because she's rallying against, you know, the machine or whatever, I think that might be more in her wheelhouse. And a big victory over Trish might help propel things and get her into a focused title storyline as well. That will also help. But yeah, I think you got to get the fans back emotionally on her side with some storyline that has her aggrieved against something.
Brad, back to you.
Yeah. And obviously tonight was a lot about setting up the SummerSlam card, as you would expect. But I'm thinking to myself, like, is SummerSlam going to be 7 hours long? Obviously we have, you know, Sammy and Kevin are going to have a match, right? I mean, I would imagine so. So you have now Becky, Trish, you're going to have Logan Paul, Ricochet, you're going to have Jey Uso and Roman, you're going to have Gunther and Drew, I assume Rhea Ripley's getting a match, I would imagine so, probably against Liv after what we saw tonight. So, and I know that there's others that I'm forgetting about, but I feel like
Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey and Shayna, correct. So what are we going to have? 10, 11 matches? I mean, we haven't even set up a lot on the SmackDown side, I feel like, unless I'm just kind of forgetting, but, I don't understand. Like, normally these pay-per-views are, you know, 6-7 matches. They're 3.5 hours. I mean, do you see this being a 4.5-5 hour SummerSlam? I mean, it just seems really excessive almost, you know?
I like the lineup, and I think they can have some matches that are a little bit shorter to make it work. I don't think they'll go past 4 hours. Famous last words, I don't think they'll go much past four. Hopefully it's more like 3:40. You know, I think for the real major titles, the pay-per-view titles, the pay-per-view brands, I'm fine with a few shows going over 3 hours and even approaching four when it's a real big marquee brand like SummerSlam. So I'm not too worried about that. I mean, I certainly prefer 2 hours, 55 minutes for 8 out of 12 pay-per-views a year, you know, or however many, you know, they squeeze in a year. But I don't really have a problem. Big stadium show, SummerSlam, a lot, you know, you just, instead of being upset about that lineup, I just think it's pretty impressive that there's all these matches that feel like they're stacking this card so much that how can you even fit it all on one night? I mean, that's a good problem to have, but you're not wrong to be hoping that WWE is cognizant of not just loading up more stuff that doesn't need to be on SummerSlam. This can be, you know, a show with, you know, whatever, 8 matches that all of them feel like they really earned the spot. You can't imagine, because of the names involved, you know, Ronda and Shayna, or Drew and Gunther, not just the top matches, Becky, Trish, where it's like, man, there's going to be a lot of third from the top matches that are going to be 6th or 7th from the top on the show. So Brad, I'm not too worried about it, but you know, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll see. I mean, I don't want to cover 4.5 hour pay-per-view because I don't like main eventers going to the ring with a tired crowd. And people at home, you know, not having the energy for it. So, but I think they've been good about it lately. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Brad, back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, I just feel like, you know, we still haven't set up really. I mean, I guess Seth is facing Finn, I guess. But, you know, it just seems like the most matches, like it almost seems like a WrestleMania card, but it's not two nights. So I don't know, but, that's fine. Whatever. How did you guys feel about, like, Liv interfering at the end? I mean, do you think that was setting up a Rhea Liv SummerSlam? Is that the direction, or was that just to tie in everything storyline-wise from what happened earlier in the night to later in the night and kind of neutralize, allowing the door for the retention of the titles?
I think Liv is more of a transitional opponent, and then Raquel will heal up and be the SummerSlam opponent. The focus has been on Raquel and Rhea having that stare down, and that's what they're selling. I don't think the knee injury, I mean, unless she ends up with a legit injury, I think Liv is fodder for Ripley on Raw, and the big match is Raquel. What do you think there?
My initial thought was that they were leaning toward Liv, but it does make sense that I forget that there's still a couple weeks, a couple Raws before actually SummerSlam actually happens. So, yeah, you could still set them up and have a big marquee match with Liv against Rhea and then have Liv get destroyed and Raquel can come out for the big save and then set that match up. So you still do have time for that. So I bet that's how it ends up playing out.
Yep, me too. Brad, anything else for us?
Very last thing. Do you guys think, and I don't want to be Mr. Negativity, because I really love
too
the
late.
WWE too product. And I love the WWE product, and I always try to enjoy it. But I don't want to be Mr. Negative. But do you guys feel like the Brock Cody segment fell a little flat to you? Because to me, I don't know. No, okay.
Well, wait, go ahead. I didn't mean to stop you. I just had to blurt out.
Oh, no, I was just saying, like, do you feel...
Make your case.
To me, I don't know. It just felt like the same exact thing that we've seen, you know, 3-4 times, where Cody's getting destroyed by Brock. And, I mean, I guess the family angle did add a little bit of a dynamic. But I don't know. I felt like maybe, like, for the fans, because a lot of it was at ringside, and you had this huge 13, 14,000-person crowd in a major city in this country, you know, you did everything ringside and you didn't really give him much in the ring, much. I was just thinking, you know, maybe that fell a little bit flat with the crowd because the crowd didn't seem, they were very into Cody, but then when all of that happened, it I don't know, it just didn't feel right to me. It felt like more of the same, but I want your opinion on that. And, you know, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I was so negative. It's just whatever.
No. Don't apologize. We want your actual opinions on things. Always good to hear from you, Brad. Darren, I'll throw to you. I mean, I like the Cody Lesnar segment. I'm not worried about it seeming repetitive. I think the family angle added to it enough. I don't dislike Brock's promos. I think he's better on the mic than he gives himself credit for. But, I mean, Cody doing his thing and Brock doing his thing. I mean, it's fine. I mean, their personalities are over. You don't have to me, you don't have to be original. You just have to be effective. And I thought this worked, but what did you think?
Yeah, you don't have to reinvent the wheel necessarily. With that said, I thought it was an effective angle. I mean, you go out there and you do what you have to do, but I just hate the cliche of the hometown hero getting beaten up in front of his hometown fans. Like, that's very WWE, and I like to get away from that. If you could have maybe delayed it a week or something like that and just made the fans more satisfied instead of seeing their hero just getting destroyed. But I understand for the heat and the big picture, you got to do that. So the angle was fine. I mean, sure. And I got to agree with Brad a little bit. Yeah, it gets tired of Brock coming up there beating up somebody. Then he goes on to the pay-per-view and loses. So it's definitely a formula, but it worked.
How is Cody doing for you, Darren? And, you know, what should we talk about next? And, you know, the folksy way that he's addressing things, choking up, talking about his mom being, you know, a bigger influence on him than even his dad, because his dad was on the road a lot. We've got the Cody documentary coming out on Peacock that they plugged tonight, and I'm really looking forward to that. 2 hours of Cody's story. I don't know how they edited Cody down to just 2 hours talking about himself. but he's got a great story to tell, and he loves talking about himself. That's not a dig. It might sound that way. It might be throwing shade. No, I'm really – I mean – I'm not an I am. I mean, it's what makes Cody work, you know? I mean, he takes his character very seriously. He takes his career seriously. He aspires to be a big star and is frustrated in when he hasn't been. And there is a self-confidence about him that mixed with kind of the folksy right person for the right moment, which is what he is for WWE right now, it's taken off and it's really worked.
Right. Timing was everything. They needed somebody that could kind of fill that role, and he fits it perfectly. The fan base, as they are now, they are very accepting of that character. So he came along at exactly the right time, and they're eating up everything, and he plays into that. He does the emotion thing where, I'm sure he might have been touched when he's mentioning his mother. I'm sure to some degree he is, but also, I think he plays that up a little bit. Also, I think he's talented enough to do that. So, you know, he hits all the cliches and he's doing very well. Am I tired of what do you want to talk about? Of course, but apparently I'm in the minority because they eat that stuff up, and they might, as I've mentioned before, want to do some tweaks to the character because you don't want to just have them just being over the top like that all the time. It's going to wear on people's nerves, I really believe. So you might want to tweak it, but for right now, I mean, they're eating it up. I wouldn't change anything right now because he's in the zone.
My son, when he was like two or so, I can't remember exactly, when he first started to kind of be able to communicate with words somewhat effectively, he'd like sit down and be like, so what do you want to talk about? And he loved that. He was like, I'm growing up and I can talk to my dad about stuff. So whenever Cody says it, I just think about that cool memory as a dad and how my son's face would just light up as his little toddler. Like, yes, we can talk now. I'm not just crying and you know, breaking things or whatever. So it has a soft spot for me. But I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, it's the thing he does. And I genuinely think it's fine. It's kind of his thing. But I'm not at all surprised it irritates people either. Okay. Let's move on to our on-site correspondent, Chris. We're going to get back to calls after that, so you can you're absolutely welcome to get on the on the phone lines. And Wade, Jay, we're going to go to you after on-site correspondent Jay in Hartford. So please hang with us. I know sometimes we don't get to you in time, and you've got to drop off, but we'll take you first after Chris. Speaking of Chris, let's bring on our on-site correspondent who is in the building tonight. Chris, welcome. How was the show?
The show was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking time to talk with us. How full was the building, really? I know they were, you know, heading towards a really big crowd. WWE touted on commentary. It was a sellout. They did some wide angles of that beautiful arena that looked great. But you were in it. Were there empty seats they were hiding from us?
I mean, if you could count, there'd probably be 100 empty seats that I saw, but that's the entire arena. Like, it was full all the
wow.
way to the top.
And you've been to that arena before for big shows. How was the enthusiasm of the crowd, and how did it feel? I know how different it feels with my hometown arenas when it's packed and enthusiastic versus, you know, one-third, not quite half full, sparse. Is it just a lot more fun than usual to be in a building that full?
So I went with my buddy Joey, and I was telling him halfway through, I was like, I can't remember the last time we've been to a WWE TV taping that the crowd has been that into it. We went to WWE Day One, and they've had WrestleMania here and stuff like that. But as far as a regular TV taping, this was probably the liveliest crowd since AEW's first time here when it was Cody and Wardlow in the cage.
Interesting. So who was most over? Was it Cody by a distance, or was it a cluster of others and maybe a couple even more so?
Yeah, I think they kind of like Cody a little bit in Atlanta, just a little. Rhea was really over. I mean, even when they showed video packages during the commercial breaks, they were doing the top 25 Instagram photos, and they went through the entire list. And when they got to number one, it was Rhea and Dom, and the crowd just blew up, split with boos and cheers for her and boos for Dominic.
That's great. How about Cody? The pop for Cody, was there any mixed response to it, first of all? Like, or was it just, we love you and everything you're saying
No.
we're into? Or was there any kind of pushback at all?
No, there was no pushback from Cody. And I've been saying for a while, like, I'm kind of tired of Cody coming out in a three-piece suit. So him coming out in ring gear and his T-shirt cut all up, it just looked cooler. And it looked like,
good point.
I don't know, it just made me want to cheer for him even more, even if you were there to be like, to kind of go against the grain. There was nobody going against Cody. I mean, after the fact, there was a dad walking with his kids that was like, y'all told me Cody was good. He got beat up in front of his mom, just kind of teasing them. But other than that, it was 100% everybody was behind Cody today.
Darren, do you have a question for Chris?
Let's see. Did the Rhodes family stay out there the whole show? I'm just curious.
That's a good question.
Ooh, I didn't even pay attention to that. I do know that the entire time Brock was putting it down on Cody, there was a cameraman right in their face. Like, I mean, they were trying to get every reaction that the mom was making for it. And that was one thing I noticed tonight was the camera crew is, they are right there. I'm talking like 6 inches from the people's face when they're looking for reactions for it. But I don't know if they stayed out there the entire night. I really didn't pay attention to it.
My hunch, Darren, is that they rewarded some fans with upgraded tickets from the upper deck after that angle was over. Usually, like, Stephanie got a bad rep, and others, too, like in NXT when they're like, hey, look who's here. And it was like they were there for, like, the 15 seconds that they're on camera. And, you know, people would resent, oh, you know, you look like you're here to watch the show, but you're not really here to watch the show. So, yeah, my hunch is that they probably didn't stick around the whole time. And really, storyline-wise, they should be back there checking on Cody, you know? Like, how are you doing, bud? We got to be here to support you. So I wouldn't even, you know, storyline-wise, hold it against them. But obviously they're not going to have empty seats, so they had some seat fillers who had a very lucky, you know, upgrade. Go ahead. No, Darren, please go.
Related to that, was the crowd bummed when they saw the hometown hero getting beaten up? Did it take the crowd down or out of it, do you think?
So when the first chair shot happened, you could hear it, but you couldn't see it. I don't know if y'all could see it on TV or not. When Cody went marching backstage looking for Brock, and when Brock showed up,
Right. Everybody
just kind of popped. And they were booing him, of course, and I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but Brock left the ring. Cody was in the ring, and Brock went back in with a chair and hit him again. And then the crowd started chanting for Cody. He finally stood up. He left the chair in the ring, and he walked away on his own, and they kind of popped for that. But it wasn't a letdown. I think people were more upset that we didn't think we were going to get to sing Seth Rollins' song by the end of the night. And then he came out, I think, after Raw went off the air. And they kind of, Sammy and KO kind of led everybody in it. But as far as Cody, like, I think people were fine with him coming out, cutting his promo, and then getting to see Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, the last thing we saw on TV with Brock was Lesnar yelling, challenge accepted, I'll see you at SummerSlam, bitch. And that was the end of the TV coverage of it. So
sounds like quite a bit happened after that. We didn't hear any of that. We saw Brock say something to him, but we couldn't hear any of it. So like I said, Brock left the ring, then he turned back around and came out and hit Cody with the chair again. And then, like I said, the crowd started chanting for Cody, and he finally stood up, and they kind of popped, and then he left.
Was there any crowd reaction tonight, Chris, that surprised you, either louder or softer than you would have expected?
Like I said earlier, I was surprised by how energetic the crowd was. We got there about 7 o'clock. And main event started at 7:30, and Tozawa's music hit, and you would have thought The Rock came out. Like, people were so excited to see Tozawa, and I have no idea why. And then he
the first baby face always gets a pop. Everybody wants to. Yeah, they're in a dark mat. Everybody wants to get the baby face out.
He ended up losing to what's that guy's name? Riddick Moss. He lost to Riddick Moss. Spoiler alert. And Riddick Moss got – his nose is bleeding for some reason. I don't know what exactly happened to him. But, yeah, Tozawa got a big pop. So that was, to me, the most surprising part. And then, like I said, Rhea. Every time they show Rhea Ripley, the crowd just lost it for her.
Yeah. Did it seem like there was too much Judgment Day or just the right amount? Because, I mean, that – we're talking earlier in the show, the faction just seems so over. I mean, Raw's doing well. Cody's obviously really over. Lesnar's a big star. But Raw, when you think about in there's Seth and there's Becky, the Judgment Day feels like they're as big of a reason that WWE, that Raw, the brand, feels hotter than it's been in a while. I think they're as much of a factor or, you know, right in the mix with Seth and Cody and Becky as X. So what was it, just was it like seeing Judgment Day be a big part of the show.
Yeah, being in person, seeing them is so much different because the lighting changes. They got this big logo that they have in the background while they're out there. They got a big spotlight on them. Like I said, the light changes. So I think the arena's like almost completely purple, and they got cool music, and they all walk out. They just look like four badasses, right? And it's like fan. I didn't think I'd like him, and here I am cheering for him. By the way, side note, there's a little girl in front of me. She hated the fact that I was cheering for the Judgment Day. Like, every time I was like, yeah, Dominic, let's go. She turned around and gave me the most evil look, and her dad was just like, don't start a fight with people behind us, babe. Relax. So, yeah. The kids hate Judgment Day, and a lot of the adults kind of thought they were cool, but when I tell you the arena booed Dominic so loudly every time he got ready to talk or do a move or do a little Eddie Guerrero shake, like, that guy's just, it was just fun to boo him, man. It was fun to see that in person. I was one of the people that thought, oh, they're just piping in all that. No, they didn't pipe anything in. That was legit.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Was there a low point of the night?
The low point of the night probably would have been the women's tag match because, you know, Raquel got beat up beforehand and you kind of knew it was going to be what it was. So myself and a bunch of other people kind of went to use the restroom and get refills or whatever. And then once the title change happened, people popped, but during the match itself, it was just kind of like, eh, it would have been better if Raquel hadn't got hurt, and you would have thought there would have been a competitive match. But that was definitely a time where people kind of knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Darren, anything else you want to ask Chris?
Yeah, I did have a question. A couple weeks ago, our on-site correspondent mentioned that during the commercial break they had entertainment, like you mentioned the Instagram thing. They said that they had a Hulk Hogan imitation contest, and I thought that was raised some eyebrows here for me personally.
No, they definitely didn't have that.
Okay.
They did have a DX crotch chop camera where everybody was doing the suck it sign, and I'm glad you asked about this. Samantha Irvin is phenomenal. Like, during the commercial breaks, during the ring intros, everything, she put so much into entertaining everybody. She was singing along with the DX song, but there's all kind of entertainment during the commercial breaks, and she's leading the charge for it. So, yeah, but there was no Hogan impersonation, and not in Atlanta. Like, we wouldn't play that shit in Atlanta. Sorry. That stuff is
okay.
Good. That's good. Tell us a little bit more, if there is anything more to convey, about what happened after the show went off the air. How long did the Seth song go? How into it was the crowd? Or were people filing out? And was there anything else after that?
I don't know what you all saw, like I said, but Finn Balor came back out when Sami and KO had won. And he was like, yo, you know, it's three of us, let's go get them. And I don't know what happened with Seth and him backstage, but apparently he won the fight backstage. He came back out, and then Seth's music hits. He comes out, clears the ring, and then they do like a little go home promo where they're working on a song, and the song was "Don't Be So Angry, KO," and everybody sang or "Don't Be So Angry, Kevin," to the theme of Seth Rollins' song, and the entire crowd sang for probably 5 minutes.
Oh wow!
KO said he loved the song, and they hugged and sent everybody home.
Was there anything else from the crowd in terms of crowd reactions, chants, or anything that's noteworthy or surprised you or was funny? Chants, reactions, signs, drunken fights? It's not the 80s.
There were a lot of signs, more than I thought, and a lot of them had to do with Rhea and Dom, almost everyone. There's a lot of women there wanting to be mommy's friends. With signs like that, I'll leave it at that. There were some signs that they couldn't put on the screen.
Funny.
And, yeah, there was I don't know if you've been to a show recently, but, you know, everybody woos whenever it gets really crowded. They do the Ric Flair woo. That's been replaced by, yeah, from L.A. Night.
Oh.
Some guy always stands up and cuts a little L.A. Night promo, and then everybody starts chanting, yeah. As we're leaving the arena, there's a guy like, when I say dummy, you say yeah. And I'm like, no, I'm not saying that. You just called me a dummy. But, of course, everybody else did. So,
oh, the things people do to be part of a chant.
Yeah.
Part of their ritual. Yeah.
One of the things that I pay attention to when you have on-site correspondent is the merch stand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They always have Atlanta merchandise here. They had a Cody, Georgia's own Cody Rhodes red T-shirt with his logo on it, which I got. And then they had like an Atlanta 316, and they had an Atlanta Hawks WWE Raw. They had a Georgia Bulldogs world title because they're the national champion. They had an Atlanta Braves world title and autographed Cody Rhodes weight belt. But the majority of the shirts that I saw people actually wearing were, there's a lot of Stone Cold, a lot of Rock, a lot of NWO, and a lot of Bloodline stuff. There's actually one family, and I pointed out to my buddy Joey, the parents had NWO shirts on, and the kids were wearing Bloodline shirts. And it's like, look at that. That's adorable, right? Like, you got the NWO parents and the Bloodline kids. Like, it just passed on down.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Oh, wow. Yeah, the generational T-shirt identity of pro wrestling fans. You can kind of tell what era people are, if they're being nostalgic or current day. Not that there aren't, you know, people in their 30s, 40s, 50s wearing Bloodline T-shirts, but yeah, you know, the there's not, yeah, you can tell from T-shirts the age of fans with a pretty good guesswork. But why not keep cashing in? I'm sure Rock and Austin are happy with the merch checks
right.
that come from that.
Oh, well. The majority of those shirts, though, didn't look like they were new. They looked like they'd been around for about 20 years, a lot of those shirts. Like,
yeah, that's a good
people that were coming out and had those shirts were, yeah, not in a bad way. Just, you know, you could tell that it was an original shirt they had got back in the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I guess that happens. You got the stack of T-shirts that aren't in circulation that you dig down deep in the dresser drawer to find when you're going to the wrestling show. That works too. Were people into the Viking Raiders Alpha Academy match? I mean, that looked like a lot of fun. I mean, just nonstop spots in action and brawling. But and was Maxine still really over with this crowd tonight?
So, when you asked about the lull point in the show earlier, this was the part I forgot about. They brought the Viking Raiders arena props or whatever out, and they set them up all around the ring. And I feel like we didn't have anything in the ring for about 20 minutes. And that's when people kind of got real, like, quiet. And then about halfway through the match, when Gable did that moonsault and then picked whichever one of the Raiders up and German suplexed him off of that, the crowd woke up really fast after that. But that match was fun. That match was good. But it was just, we waited so long and the props sat out there for so long. And it was just like, we knew the Viking Raiders were coming and, you knew Sarah Logan was going to come out looking like her feet didn't smell good, so it was just like a lull in the thing.
Yeah, that's great. Talk about the crowd reaction for Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey, because it sure seems if there was ever a desire to have it be a pick 'em or have Ronda be the sympathetic one, because Baszler did attack her from behind to turn, the crowd, to me, through TV, sounded like they were very pro-Baszler and wanted no part of Ronda Rousey as she spoke really fast. What was it like?
So, first off, Ronda Rousey, she had the same script they give Excalibur, I think, because she was talking like she was doing a Micro Machines commercial. Like, we couldn't understand anything she said. Baszler was the babyface, apparently, and Rousey was playing the heel. The fact that she turned around and was like, no, I'm not fighting you now, and left. But Rousey did get a big ovation when we looked up and she was, you know, standing behind us. You can drop me off right here. I'll just walk. But, it was more like Baszler was the babyface and Ronda was the heel, and that was how they did it. Baszler got a real big reaction, though, when she told Ronda she was coming for her, and I couldn't see if security stopped her or what, but she went walking up the aisle way to get to her, and then she ended up never getting
there. Would you did the crowd react to Shinsuke Nakamura's frustration in a way where, like, we sympathize with him or we're not with him on this? Because, I mean, it's understandable he'd be frustrated. But Ciampa, of course, was conciliatory, and he's like, it's my bad, patting himself on the chest, you know. Like, but it's sort of like, you know, my bad doesn't get you out of bad decisions always. Sometimes there are ramifications for it. How did the crowd react to all that? Because technically, Ciampa ruined a match before it ended, and you know, he could have waited.
Yeah, they as far as Nakamura like turning and kicking him in the face, they got a big reaction for that. But then it was one of those things again where he was screaming something and there was no microphone and we couldn't hear what he was saying, so the crowd was just kind of like, okay, now what? But they did react big time to him turning around and taking his frustrations out on Ciampa.
Yeah, yeah. Darren, anything else you want to ask before we wrap up momentarily here with Chris?
No, that was all I had.
Chris, anything else in your notes or anything else you want to share with us? I know you're familiar with our questions we ask on-site correspondents. Anything else that you were thinking you'd bring up?
I'm going to say no, and I'm actually going to mean no compared to other people that normally say no. I don't have anything else.
Oh, you are a regular.
Yeah, that's all I got.
You are a regular listener then, yep. Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much. Appreciate you taking time to talk with us.
Appreciate it, fellas. Y'all have a good night. Thank you.
Yep, you too. So you can be an on-site correspondent. Just email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let us know what show you're going to. In fact, ideally put the name of the subject line in, I'm sorry, the name of the city in the subject line. And that helps me stay organized and we'll be in touch and try to line up having you on the show like Chris just was. All right. So our phone lines are open. We are live streaming the show right now after Raw and you're invited to call us 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. All right, Jay in Hartford is up. Jay, thanks for holding. What's your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade, Darren, good evening. Thanks for taking my call, first of all. Hope you guys are doing well.
Sure.
So I love kind of piggybacking off of the previous callers. I enjoyed his live correspondence there. But something I wanted to bring up when you were talking about the parents with the – or just people with the older shirts that actually look like their older shirts.
Yep.
So
yep.
I just recently purchased a We The Ones, right, Bloodline shirt. I ordered it so that I could wear it when Raw was in Hartford, you know, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, whatever it was. And it, I didn't get it in time, unfortunately, right? So I just want a Macho Man shirt. But, like, this is the most random complaint for a post-show call, but, Wade, I wore the shirt finally when I got it. I washed it one time, and it now looks like a 20-year-old shirt. So, I don't know. I'm angry about that. It's going to look like an NWO shirt next time I wear it. I don't even know if I'm going to wear it. It looks that bad. It's a white shirt, and the red letters are, like, so faded. And I've never had that problem with WWE merchandise. So I'm like, I don't know what happened with this one. Anyway. So, I'll get into what I'm calling about for tonight. A couple of things. Cody, Wade, you say a lot of your callers report this, and something that I didn't say when I saw Raw Live a few weeks ago was how he, you know, post-segment, you know, you think he's exiting, right, and he stops at the very end of, like, the section where the crowd is to, like, you know, turn around and sign an autograph, and it's like, man, this guy is – he's hitting all the right moves. And there was a time, especially in AEW, where it seemed like overly pandering or like, you know, I don't know, just go away. None of it comes across as annoying to me. It, for whatever reason, it all comes across as genuine. Like, I loved when he introduced the new announcer a couple of weeks ago, and just everything he's doing is he's hitting the right notes. I don't know how or why it's even, you know, going so well. And Darren, I think it was you mentioning, like, being tired of the so city, what you want to talk about. But to be honest, in Hartford, we didn't get it, and I was disappointed. So, but something else I noticed, I feel like the last – and, which, you know, that speaks to when you go live, there are things that you look forward to. That's at home,
sure.
I hate Seth Rollins' song when I'm watching, but when I go live, I'm singing like crazy. So, but I think with Cody's What Do You Want to Talk About, they've actually done an okay job for me lately of like, he's been interrupted. Like, I felt like he hasn't even gotten it out in quite some time. So when I heard it tonight, I'm like, oh, he got to do it tonight. So, you know, I think maybe they are aware that, you know, it can become a little, I don't even know the word, I guess, annoying. So they try to, you know, maybe mix it up a bit. But without rambling, what I really want to get to, Wade, is a question for you two about the Judgment Day and their, I guess, longevity, right? They're teasing the breakup with Finn and Damian Priest, and, you know, And then they kind of made up last week, and tonight Finn's like, I love you, and, you know, everything's good. And what I feel like you may have already commented that you don't think it's time, but I just called to say I don't think it's time to break up the Judgment Day, right? They started out really slow with Edge. Like, it was like, what is this group, you know? And then when they switched over, they took Edge out within a matter of weeks and put in Balor. I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. And now it's worked. I mean, it's worked so well. I feel like they are one of the biggest reasons WWE are doing it or is doing as well as they're doing. Like, you look at the Bloodline, and then there's, like, this supporting cast and these supporting storylines, and I feel like the Judgment Day is, like, number two right there behind the Bloodline as far as what people are interested in. So I don't think that it's time to break up the Judgment Day. Like, I feel like they should. I think about what they did with the Shield when they started and this was the first – normally, you know, it's wrestling, you know, a faction lasts for a little bit, and then they split up. And I recall with the Shield, they started teasing a breakup, and then they actually didn't go through with it, and they actually, like, you know, reconciled and were, like, not just tension every week. They were actually a group again without fighting one another, and then eventually they circled back to it. So I'm hoping that with the Judgment Day that they actually get along for a while. I don't want them to break up at SummerSlam, whatever, maybe drag it out to Mania. I don't know if that's too long, but I feel like we can certainly get a few more months out of it. So I'll pause and see what you guys think about that.
Yeah, Darren, how do you feel about the pacing of breaking up Judgment Day? And if they do, where do the pieces fall? Who ends up in what role?
It's such a good question that was brought up because, yeah, it looked like we're headed towards a breakup. But at this point, do you even want to do that? Because they're on such a roll and everybody's playing their part so well. I guess eventually you're going to have to, at the very least, split Damian out of there, but I would hold it off for a while because things are going so well and they're such the centerpiece of the show. You're taking a risk. I mean, it looked at one point that Finn was, bringing in McDonough perhaps, but that hasn't been mentioned in several weeks.
Right.
So maybe they're thinking better of that, and you got a good thing going, and I would hold off for a while. Yeah, you know, eventually make Priest turn babyface, sure. Looks like we're headed that way, but I think you could still get a lot of out of him as part of this group. So I would put a pause on that for now.
Yeah, I think Ripley's the one who's going to be hard to keep heel, given how fans react to her, but I don't know how it all shakes down. I mean, if they do revisit JD McDonagh and Balor, if they haven't soured on JD or that angle for some reason, you know, they can form a spinoff faction or a team or whatever when they're done with Finn being a world title challenger. But it does seem like there's a chance that Priest becomes a babyface. And, you know, I don't know. I'd have to look at kind of the depth chart of the heels and faces to see how that all lines up. But I think with what he's going through now, like a Priest-Dominic feud, you know, could work with Priest as a babyface against Dom. So I don't know. There's a lot of ways they can go, but my inclination is yours. It's keep them together for a while. They got a good thing going. There's good chemistry. You can always break them up at another time, but I think they're getting a lot out of it right now, and I think it would be premature to mess with it. Jay, back to you.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys' input there. Like, I mean, they started so cold to me, the Judgment Day, and to see how they've turned it around, it's just been, you don't want to mess with a good thing. And to the point about, you know, how well the WWE is doing, they're selling out, you know, things like that. The product just seems hot. I think one of the main reasons for that, and I'll let you get to any other callers after this one, is besides the Bloodline storyline, it goes back to the Judgment Day, right? And I think they did an excellent job with the Ray Dominic story kind of leading up to WrestleMania. And I felt like for a few years there, maybe under Vince's direction, they wouldn't let stories actually play out to WrestleMania. Like, they just go ahead and blow them off. And, like, WrestleMania, they'd have, you know, big things for it, but it wouldn't feel like, you know, things that had been playing out over several months like they had this year with the Bloodline and with, you know, Cody actually winning the Rumble and then being in the main, you know, just whatever. Like, I think they did a really good job of that. But the Ray Dominic story, they played it out for so long. They didn't rush it. Like, Ray, you know, he said no for the longest, and then, you know, Dominic goes to jail and all this stuff, and, or prison, whatever, and now he's, like, the most over heel in the company. But I just wanted to shout out that storyline because, again, it ties into Judgment Day, why I think you don't want to break them up. But I think that storyline, in my personal opinion, it really got people vested or invested. And so, like, even, you know, people calling a lot talking about their kids lately and their experiences. Like, my son repeatedly wants to go back and watch, and he's just getting into the product this year. He repeatedly wants to go back and watch, hey, I want to watch WrestleMania Goes Hollywood. He wants to see the Ray Dominic match. I mean, it's not that. He's like, Dad, I want to watch the Damian Priest Bad Bunny match. So something about Judgment Day, like the caller talked about the girl, you know, sitting in front of him. Like, the kids, like, love to see the Judgment Day, like, get what's coming to them. But they're also cool, and Rhea's so over. So I didn't think I'd be calling into your show, Wade, like, blushing and gushing over the Judgment Day, but that's what I'm doing tonight. So that's all.
I know. I didn't expect to lead with that either, or have that be a big topic either at this point. If you asked me 2 months ago, I'd have been no. And no, Finn Balor still? No way. And it's like, I'm cool with it. Balor's doing good. He's channeling the main event heel Finn Balor right now, and it's credible. And Seth's playing well off him, and Dominic's amazing, and Ripley's super over, and Priest is rising to the occasion too. Yeah, it's just it's fun to watch, and you know, I'm in no rush. I mean, eventually there's going to be a split, and if they choose the timing right, it's going to be, you know, probably good for everybody and lead to some good stuff. I'm curious if they do split off anyone, if they keep the Judgment Day faction intact, or, you know, like the Shield instead of the Horsemen, once it's over, it's over, you know, or do they actually kind of reassemble it and try to keep that brand name of that faction going? And I have no idea. I have no idea. But there's, you know, it's got to cross their mind that they're onto something and they can, you know, switch out a couple pieces, but keep it going. Jay, as always, great talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you both. Have a good night.
Yep, you too. 347-215-8558. Give us a call. We'll keep the lines open for a little bit here. Push 1 if you want to be on the show. You can also still email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We'll go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on Raw? What's your A topic?
Yes, so I think I wanted to go talk about the Seth's Valor promo. I thought that was really... It was nice to see Seth in that element again. I kind of forgot how he is when he's in a serious mode, and it made me just like this promo more than their first promo heading into Money in the Bank earlier this month. So this was just a nice thing to see, and it makes me hopeful too that the match at SummerSlam will be better than the match at Money in the Bank as well. So that's my other hope as well. So I know you talked about earlier, but I just really enjoyed the subtlety that what Seth had to say, telling Finn that about he was going to ask that Finn says he's going to laugh at his face. He can't wait to laugh at his face. I thought that and that whole thing too was really interesting too. I keep that I really forgot about that Rollins did laugh at his face when he walked away. So that, and that's why he was upset about, and that really because of the injury. It was that, but also the laughing thing too. So I thought you talked about earlier, but really the depth of Rollins's demeanor and his attitude being more serious about it, I thought that was just a perfect thing that he needs to do more of moving forward when he does his promos in the rain. What do you think about that entire whole segment? I thought cool to see.
Yeah, go ahead, Darren.
What was the question? I'm sorry, you cut out just a bit.
I was just saying how the demeanor of Seth and how he just feels in that, how he feels more comfortable doing this type of promo than doing it I want him to do it more in the ring and less of the comedy stuff and more doing how he used to do in the past when he was a heel. But even when he was a babyface the first time, it's more serious. That's what I want to see Seth doing more in the ring beyond a backstage segment. So that's my I would say how you thought about that.
And I think you can sort of kind of, Darren, have it kind of like both in a better way than they're doing now by having a bigger dose of him showing that serious side and going into that more. So it's sort of, I don't want to say like a split personality, but a switch that he flips where you take him more seriously because, haha, there's the fun stuff. There's, you know, keep people off guard, be flamboyant. I'm having fun here. But he also is a world champion who takes himself more seriously and is a threatening person in the ring, and that side of him can be brought out. And so I think you can kind of have a blend of both, but it would mean more of the serious side percentage-wise and more frequently. That's kind of my framing of, I think, a little different than what Kyle's looking for, but also I don't think it's, like, contradictory either.
Right, and you can absolutely do that. The issue you're going to run into, though, is that darn song. Because when he gets out there in front of the crowd, that's all anybody wants to care about is singing that song. And it's a little bit harder to be the serious character because he's got to stand there and pose while everybody gets it out of their system. So it's kind of hard. And maybe that's why tonight they decided, let's just do it backstage. He can focus on being serious. And it takes me back to that one where he did with Riddle where he got all serious. That was backstage as well, too. So you're going to have to balance that. But people also want him in front of the crowd so they can sing that song. So you've got a little bit of a problem, but it's not that it's something they can't overcome, but they're going to have to find some kind of solution for that.
Kyle, any reaction to that or a different topic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is an interesting balance. You have to figure out how they're going to balance it out unless of you know, what's the chance maybe he could stop posing after his song is over with and just get straight to, you know, whatever. So I think that's what probably needs to happen, but we'll see. But I did like that entire thing. So I think I need to get to this Becky Trish scene, and it's I think Becky's gonna win next week, but I hope so because I think the end of this, Lita's gonna come back. I would think, you know, she was at Raw Tuxedo that she needs to have someone to get have her back. But even if she does, she's afraid to put herself out there because she always gets shut down. Just like if you're in a breakup or whatever, that's what it kind of feels like. It's like every time she opens up her heart, she gets crushed every single time. So I can understand Becky's is not wanting to do that. So, but I do think that Lita is the option. I've been saying this for weeks, but I was thinking she's either going to show up either the Raw before or at SummerSlam itself. Because this is actually getting ridiculous. I've been sick of this feud. It's been, good for Zoe for her getting over the way she is, being in position, being feuding with Becky and teaming with Trish. But for Becky's sake, this is not working. And there's not that many women for Rhea. The women's division on Raw seems all over the place. At least on SmackDown, there's some type of direction with the triple threat match, with the EO Sky Bailey problems they're having. There's some direction on SmackDown, and Raw sounds like it's all over the place with Rhea and Raquel. I'm kind of glad now that he did lose the title so they could focus on that and maybe even Liv as well for potential challengers for Rhea before Becky either later on this year or heading into next year. But what do you think about that entire that whole scene with Becky and Trish and Lee, this whole handicap thing they've been doing for weeks now? What do you think? Are they going to have Lita come back the Raw before SummerSlam?
Yeah, so I don't know about Lita. And they could, you know, it would make storyline sense. This also could be Becky makes her way past Zoe and there's a big match with Trish and, you know, two top stars from two separate generations who are overlapping right now because the Trish's comeback have a big single SummerSlam match, and I'm okay with that. I this had a little MJF aspect to it with the stages of the challenges that Becky has to go through in order to get her one-on-one match with Trish. I liked Becky's demeanor, just going, done, done, or got it. What was it? Was it done? Done deal? Something like that?
She said done.
And just very matter of fact,
done,
even...
Done, done.
Yeah, and that, and I'm curious about the tattooing, you know, her chest. I assume that will not happen. But she agreed to it. So, I mean, it's a verbal contract. I don't know. Darren, what do you think about what they're doing here and, you know, what Kyle had to say about it? I mean, to me, it seems focused and it's setting up, you know, a couple weeks of TV storylines to get to SummerSlam.
Yeah, I think it's focused, but I mean, it has dragged on quite a bit, so I can see that side of it as well. I think it's going to play its way out at SummerSlam. We just got a couple more weeks to go. Wouldn't surprise me to see Lita. I had forgotten all about her, but yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see her make an appearance to offset some interference by Zoe. I was a little surprised because they kept listening to stipulations. And that might have just been to add some sizzle to the matchup coming up. But it's just weird that they would mention that stuff if they weren't going to follow through with it, because usually in wrestling, that's the rule. If you list some stipulations, something like that is going to happen. But I don't expect any of that to happen. But I think Trish's comeback is done in a couple of weeks. They'll have the match. They'll probably hug afterwards or whatever. That'll be that. So I don't think you have much more longer to deal with it, I wouldn't think.
Kyle, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, so I think last thing I remember was this Brock and Cody match heading into SummerSlam. At this point, I was expecting some type of stipulation, but maybe not a last sustained match. We saw that last year with Lesnar and Reigns, so probably not that. But they've been, you know, they had these regular singles matches. So I think at this point, set a stipulation match for their last and final match, hopefully for SummerSlam, because I can't expect them to have another normal singles match, I don't think. So they think they're going to add a stipulation to their match at SummerSlam. But that's all I have. Thanks, I'll call.
All right, cool. What do you, stipulation match, Darren? Do they need that? Would it be?
I don't think necessarily, but since it's SummerSlam, they might do some. But they, I'd think of anything, but I don't think they need it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not even sure what it would be. I mean, a hair match, get a tattoo on your chest. That's the,
yeah, apparently the that's match. We're headed,
yeah.
headed that way.
I know. All right. So Azan from St. Louis emailed, and he says, first question, what did you think? We haven't gotten to this yet. What did you think about Titus O'Neil on commentary this evening? Darren, you first.
It was fine. He cracks me up sometimes with some of his lines, but that was out of nowhere. I was like, did I miss something? What's he doing here? Maybe they're trying to reintroduce him into storylines or something, but I swore I missed something. I don't know what that was about.
I know. Yeah, it did feel a little random. I don't think they covered why he was there. I mean, he's a Florida native, so I'm not sure if there's a Atlanta connection with him. Yeah, so maybe I'm just forgetting or missing something. But he was like, when you're not experienced in color commentary, like you think that you don't understand that your goal is to not talk over or yell over the moment, but to react to it on a slight delay. And all he, I mean, it was fun because he's like so into it. Whoa, yeah, like
right.
He was cheering. Yes. And it's, you know, it feels genuine, and there's something kind of endearing about that. But I wouldn't want to have 3 hours of that. You know what I mean?
No.
So.
No, it was refreshing. The enthusiasm was refreshing. And, you know, it wasn't some scripted stuff or anything like that by any means. But no, would you want that for more than one match? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't, I'm not quite sure. I'm trying to come up with theories because I feel like there's something that we're missing, but I don't think it's leading to Titus against Ivar. You know, I mean, like,
there's nothing
to it in that way.
I thought for sure he was going to get involved in a match for some reason, and you know, they would play off of him falling that time or something like that. But that didn't happen. So maybe we'll find out in the coming weeks.
Or maybe we'll never know.
Or we'll never know.
I know. All right, number two. Exactly. Yep. Number two, I've been noticing ever since the pandemic, WWE's been using these talk show segments basically every week, and I'm a huge fan of Miz TV. What do you think about Miz TV as a storyline trope? He covered a decent amount of territory, throughout Pat McAfee's name. I don't know if that's planting a seed for it's going to drive Brad nuts, but maybe a Miz versus Pat McAfee like SummerSlam match. I don't know. It felt kind of random, but it was, you know, golf tournament name dropping, which was fine. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think of this week's Miz TV, and what do you think of the talk show format itself? Grayson Waller on SmackDown and Miz on Raw. We haven't seen much of the KO show, or what other ones are there?
This week was just a way to spruce up the interview segment with Becky and company, because it didn't focus on Miz whatsoever. It's just a way to just add a little bit to it. She could push him around and get some cheers, and then I think he totally left, if I'm not mistaken. So it's just a way just to spice up an interview segment, and that's basically all that they have been like the last couple of weeks. I mean, I'm not a big fan of them, but they don't annoy me too much. Just a way to get to where they're going.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, Miz is just there. I like Grayson Waller for two of the first three shows. He didn't really do or say much. Miz always, you know, he's confident on the mic. He's got something to say. Sometimes it relates to a feud he's having, and other times it's just, you know, going back to Piper's Pit and the Snake Pit and on, and the Flower Shop. It's just, it's a personality to shake up the way that promos are delivered. It's just a different setting to keep things fresh. And I'm fine with it. I actually kind of like the idea of something. I mean, I know it can then have some down periods, but like I'm watching WWF Superstars in the 80s, the syndicated 1 hour show. I mean, you just were counting down the minutes to Piper's Pit. And
right.
It was, you know, it wasn't a super long segment, but that was the big thing. It's Roddy Piper. He's going to have a big star on. This could be a big angle. Either way, something's going to happen. Someone's going to say something. And, you know, sometimes you were let down, sometimes you weren't, but you just knew when it was going to be on, like about 34 minutes into the hour,
yep.
There's Piper's Pit. So, you know, I like the idea of just a scheduled talk show at roughly a certain time every week and, you know, let it, I mean, I don't know. Some people are like, I don't want Miz TV every week, but I mean, you're kind of getting it. I don't know what percentage of the weeks, but it's a lot.
In fairness, speaking of those old shows, sometimes Piper's Pit was the only thing that happened on those shows.
Yeah.
That's why he would look forward to that.
I know. I I love seeing, you know, the wrestlers finishing holds and the wrestlers ring entrances, and the jobbers are so pathetic sometimes. It's fun seeing them take their bumps and all of that. But yeah, I mean, it was that's what we had. It was the highlight of my week as a kid is an hour of squash matches with the Piper's Pit, you know that.
Yep.
But, and then you're left, and this never happens anymore, ever, for anybody. I was left wanting more. You know, I mean, that's just like, that's not even an option in life anymore, because there's always something more, on demand,
yes.
Or there's just tomorrow night, and then the next night, and the next night. Spending, you know, all week thinking about 2 or 3 hours of wrestling that you watched without a single competitive match that you've seen.
Can you imagine?
I mean, it's a whole different world as a wrestling fan. And, oh, man, and I mean, that's what it was when I started the newsletter. I mean, those early newsletters, it wasn't just trying to keep up with all the great matches and all the major promos and big angles. It was a different time period, and it was about, you know, house shows and – was there even a 3-star match all weekend, you know? And now it's like there were 7 matches that were 4.5 or 5 stars on one weekend. It's a different world. And,
Yep.
I mean, obviously there's tons of positives about this, but there was something a little simpler and more peaceful about being left wanting more with a desire to see more instead of people calling up Brad lamenting over SummerSlam having too many good marquee matches. So different.
When you put it that way.
All right. Number three. What do you think about the Raw backstage interviews? I'd say Byron Saxton hasn't expanded his role for someone who has been on national TV since 2009. And Jackie Redmond brings more of that actual sports feel to the show. Byron was just sort of a prop to ask a question or two before Balor took over. And I thought it's fine. I think Byron's doing a fine job. It's not like great, but I don't have a problem with the role they put him in. I don't think he's overexposed. And when he asks questions, he's good. It's solid. Jackie Redmond seems professional and does bring a sports-like feel. I'm not going to really pick sides. I think they're both doing just fine. How about you, Darren?
Yeah, they're doing fine. I mean, do they really need two people to do that? I mean, not that I advocate for anybody losing their job or anything, but no, they're both fine at what they do. They're not asked to do really that much. They're fine at it.
So whose head are you calling for, Darren?
Neither. Absolutely not. I'm allowed to answer it.
All right. I just knew that would get you. You do not want to be known as someone who cost someone a job. I just have that. Okay. So Shinsuke Nakamura, are you intrigued with what they did with him tonight? In terms of having more of an edge, tired of people in his business. Is this a heel turn? If it is a heel turn, where does he go, and does that rev him up, or is he just – they just think, we need a mid-card heel?
I liked where that was going. It, you know, gives him a little something to do, a little edge. I hope they're just not going to add another triple threat or whatever. But I hope this actually leads to something. He's somebody that, you know, you can put a manager with him and just – turned to a whole new thing for him, and it would freshen up the character. So I hope it's something like that, and this is not just a 1 week thing, because I think you've got a lot of material to work with there. But I'd find a manager for him, see what you can do.
A guy who's in a similar place right now is Matt Riddle. You know, losing, getting TV time, being treated like a star in kind of a general sense, but there to have a decent match but lose. You know, the trajectory is not upward. They're not in that zone that a lot of wrestlers are, where they're being protected, where there has to be interference or cheating to lose. How do you feel about where Riddle is right now? I mean, I know there's, you know, been issues outside of the ring with him, and that might have soured them on him or made them a little hesitant to get super behind him. But it also just could be, yeah, he got kind of lucky with Randy and the RK-Bro thing, but we don't know how to write for him, and he's valuable in the role that he's in, you know, which is not all that different than Ricochet, who I want to get to next, because that was a heck of a promo. But Riddle, what do you think?
Yeah, well, this kind of, I mean, that was a very definitive win or definitive loss, depending on which side you're looking at it. That's just going to be where he's positioned at now, and there's nothing wrong with that. Just a strong somebody you can get a strong victory over to get somebody else over, kind of like a gatekeeper role, if we want to go old school, kind of like a junkyard dog role, where if you get a victory over him, it means something, and no reason he can't keep his popularity and interact with other people, but that's about the level that he's going to be at, and that's fine. There's nothing to be ashamed about with that, but that's just going to be his role going forward. It certainly appears.
Yeah. Ricochet, Javier messaged. He wasn't able to call tonight. He had some family over, but he messaged and he said, "Dude, where the blank has this Ricochet been? I don't know what happened, but I thought, you know, last week it was, you know, you could see why he wasn't polished and they didn't lean on him for this stuff, but like he's getting reps and he's getting better. And I don't know if tonight was his best promo ever. I mean, it wasn't like huge and substantial, but I feel like he's getting more comfortable and in maybe a zone where they might be able to look at his talking as not a deal killer, but just not a strength, but something they can work with. Did that jump out to you tonight?
Yeah, I was really impressed with it. I think a lot of it has to do with he has some material to work with. He's in a feud that you've got something to actually talk about. So that helps immensely. But also he did his part of carrying that interview. This is something – he's done a couple pre-recorded things that they've had, like, just online and that didn't make TV that were really good. So I think he's just been waiting for the opportunity, and he knows that the spotlight is on him and people are going to see if he can carry this. And I think he came through on that interview. Again, not, you know, just absolutely spectacular, but for him, I thought it was excellent. So I think he impressed a few people behind the scenes with that one.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, and then I'll throw to you if there's anything we haven't covered, Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville winning the tag titles. Is this just because they want to split Raquel and Liv off with Ripley, and they just picked a team that they think is entertaining? Did they do enough to build them up as even being slightly credible? Or is it the women's tag titles and don't sweat it? It's, you know, it's not a priority, and don't get all worked up if it's not a super credible team. But my God, have we gone quite the distance downward from what I thought was going to be a Road Warrior-like reign of terror by Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler to now Chelsea Green and Sonya, who I don't know what their record is, but I do not look at them as a team that was even deserving to be in the match to earn a title shot, much less win it. But I'm entertained by them. I'm just, the booking didn't exactly make it seem like this was a long-term plan, but again, I don't think they care that much about the holders of those titles being all that credible.
Yeah, that's not a priority for them. They'll put those belts on anybody, clearly, because they must not have known this was coming, because they've got zero, like, credibility or as far. I mean, they're very funny with the little skits they do with Chelsea and that kind of thing. So they're entertaining, and that's the role of the women's tag team titles. It's just something to do. I mean, it's not going to be your money drawing titles by any stretch of the imagination. So they're fine with it. I don't have a problem with them being the champions. I think that'll, you know, lead to some very entertaining interviews and skits and stuff. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm too. I mean, I'll be entertained by it. I just, it's a big drop off from what I was thinking Ron and Shayna were going to do for those belts. I'll just put it that way. Darren, anything else you want to bring up that maybe it's in your notes or you thought of that we haven't talked about yet?
I think we hit everything looking through the notes here. I think we covered everything pretty much. I was surprised just that the Alpha Academy Viking Raiders match, that it was as entertaining as it was, because that was something I wasn't necessarily looking forward to, but they really came through. Yeah. And I think they might give a look at the Viking Raiders to do something more substantial going forward, because I wouldn't be surprised if they impress some people backstage as well.
I know, yeah, yeah. I think on the Keller Hotline earlier today, when I previewed Raw, it's like, this is going to be a good match. You know, Viking Raiders are good. Gable and Otis are really good. Maxine is really over. I mean, I kind of wasn't surprised that I was as entertained as I was by it. All right, we have a late caller pushing one.
Okay.
Let's see what they have in store for us. 720, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, sorry for the late call. Miguel from Denver.
No, that's okay. What first name? I didn't catch your first name. Sorry.
Oh, Miguel.
Oh, Miguel. Sure. Yeah. What's on your mind? Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Thank you. I've called a couple times before, so I'm not a first time caller, but a rare time caller. I'll be quick since I know you guys are wrapping up. But overall on Raw, I thought it was, you know, a good show. Everything kind of just flowed and for the most part made sense. Isn't too much to criticize. A lot of build up to SummerSlam, but I really wanted to just call mainly just to kind of say, I think it's overall, it's a special time in the industry, I feel like. You know, I feel like ever since Triple H took over, there's been a lot more enthusiasm, you know, positivity, and kind of, I guess, hope, you know, for lack of a better word. You know, everything with the Bloodline, Judgment Day, even, you know, more recently for tonight, they're clicking on a lot of cylinders. And, you know, I think there's, you know, nothing's perfect. You could obviously still criticize, and there's flaws in, I think, every promotion. But even with, like, AEW, just to have another competitor with a big TV, you know, deal, them selling a bunch of tickets for Wembley, I just think it really is a special time in the industry. And so, you know, as somebody who, you know, who covers the industry, Wade, I think that you probably have one of the best perspectives on this. What do you think that, you know, it's easy to kind of get caught up in the negativity sometimes, especially with, you know, social media and whatnot. Do you feel the same way? Do you think that we're kind of in a special time? Because you never know how long these times will last. And so I just think sometimes as wrestling fans, we should be able to kind of step back and soak in the moment. And so, yeah, do you feel the same way? And where do you guys feel this kind of era fits, and I guess in the wrestling history as a whole. And that's pretty much all I wanted to ask. So thank you guys for taking my call.
Sure thing. Yeah. Thanks for calling. I am. I'm not ready to call it a boom period, but I'm not saying we're not in it and don't realize it yet. You know, from a financial standpoint, WWE's in a boom period. From a ticket selling standpoint, both companies have moments. You know, AEW fewer of them because, you know, we saw the Canadian tour, some smaller crowds, but some good crowds too. But WWE is what's clicking. You know, and it, you know, it coincided with the Bloodline, but it's also Cody. It's a mix of a lot of things that is working. We've talked about Judgment Day a lot. There are fans who like to sing the Seth Rollins song. The quality of the wrestling is good. WWE just has a rhythm to what they're doing. You know, it is kind of polished, but it doesn't feel like, you know, a format sheet where just stuff is dropped in with someone half asleep, not paying attention. Like, it feels like there's an enthusiasm and a competitiveness to get ahead and put in your best performances on the mic and in the ring. And WWE has a good roster, and they're, you know, I mean, Vince McMahon being back in the mix, and there's some things that have, you know, been a downer compared to some trends that were there with Triple H, but overall it's a fun product to watch. Like you say, Miguel, I've been covering this a long time, and there have been times where, you know, there was a show or two I covered and it was a slog, and it was just, you know, you couldn't even focus on anything other than what were they thinking? Man, that was distasteful. Man, that was in bad taste. That was not good. Why that's politics. Why that person's getting pushed, and why is this person getting under pushed? And it just, those things are not like complaints right now. A lot of the shows are just like trying to figure out why this thing is working so well. We didn't expect to work so well. And in looking at Cody and going, okay, I'm a little surprised there's not any backlash, but why look for backlash? If it's working, it's working, and it is, and people are into them. So I don't think we can be in the midst of an era and know it's a boom period if there isn't a metric that's off the charts. And there isn't a metric that's off the charts other than – and it's not off the charts. Attendance right now is on the high end of what I've seen in a long time for WWE. You know, both big stadium shows and arena shows, TVs, and, you know, WrestleTix is doing a really good job on Patreon chronicling that, so support them if you're into that kind of statistic stuff. But it doesn't feel like Nitro, where Nitro just stormed and then Raw had Stone Cold, and it's just like, whoa. And those were off the chart ratings, you know, for Nitro compared to Raw, and then Raw's come back with Austin and Rock and the McMahon heel character, and you know, the enthusiasm and the energy of those crowds at the peak of the Monday Night War era with the signs and the rowdiness and all the 20-somethings coming out and just that weren't watching wrestling 4 years earlier coming out, that's just an unmistakable boom period. This is, comes down to how do you define it, but it is a special time. I think, Miguel, you have a good term for it. And then AEW, it's like, I mean, that's where there's more question marks. You know, what is their identity? There's some angst over, are they really differentiating themselves from WWE instead of, you know, being kind of this blend and mix of a lot of different things, but too much a derivative WWE? Is Tony Khan spread too thin, all that? But I think, like, I mean, coming out of Collision last Saturday and that tag match, it's like that was special. And they're going to enough buildings with big crowds, and then you got the Wembley crowd. It's not like, you know, I mean, viewership's down for AEW this year and viewership's up for WWE this year. So, you know, it's not a boom period for the industry if one company is down and the other is up, if that other company isn't off the charts with some of their numbers. And it's just special. It's good. It's fun. And there's, you know, a half a dozen top acts that are working right now really well, and a good supporting crew and a well-oiled machine. So I think I want to see this last a little longer, and, you know, we can revisit this, you know, in 6 or 9 months and then kind of assess what we're in the midst of and what this signals. Darren, what do you think?
It was such a good question and comment by Miguel. I would agree this is a very special time because, you know, the big company that's on top, WWE, is doing not only the big things, right, which, of course, the Bloodline feud, Cody, of course, but even, like, the small things, just like, I mean, getting over Alpha Academy and, you know, they're popping for, and her name escapes me, their manager, like they're building towards her doing the worm, and when that happens, people are going to go crazy. So even like the little things like that is, you know, they're putting on entertainment. Sure, 3 hours is too long, but the shows are entertaining. There's lots to see when people go to the shows. Like our callers are just very excited about the arena experience. And you look at AEW, and I mean the fans of Dynamite. I mean, those are quality. You can, of course, you know, critique the shows, of course, but they're fun to watch. And I mean, Collision, like that tag team match, wrestling doesn't get any better than that. And I mean, just on free TV, AEW is competing against itself essentially to, you know, what show is better, Dynamite or Collision. So you have that. Even like Ring of Honor every week, which you don't hear many people talk about, but they're putting on quality matches every week that people don't even, you know, really talk about. But that's happening every week. And even Impact, which is under the radar as well, is a quality wrestling show that which we were alluding to earlier. I mean, like in 1991, if we were watching that Impact show, I would have been like, this is the greatest thing that ever happened. You know, we didn't, you know, people like us who've been around for a while, like in those days where, you know, sometimes entertainment was thin wrestling shows, like, yeah. And even like in the 2000s and stuff, when it was just WWE and they didn't have any competition that was pushing them to be excellent, they would just throw anything out there. And I mean, that's almost no exaggeration, some of the stuff they were putting out there. But now they're in a position where they're like, yeah, we got some competition, and it's really showing. I mean, even like MLW, all these places, New Japan, of course, putting on excellent matches. You can shake a stick and you're going to have some good quality wrestling, good promos and stuff. So I think it is a special time, and I'm glad that Miguel pointed that out. You know, just sit back. Yes, we like to critique, and rightfully so, some of the things that are going on, but I think we should just take the time to appreciate all the good stuff that's going on.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it is really a good era, and I kind of focused on WWE and AEW because that's where the biggest, you know, metric curiosity and the most things we can track, Impact, you know, it's there, and we can talk about it. I mean, Slammiversary, the weekly TV show, you're covering it. Are you noticing a sense that they're benefiting, the rising tide lifts all boats? Is it they're just kind of in the same spot? It's good, but it doesn't seem like there's anything that's really going to, you know, there's no needle moving going on. Where are you on where Impact fits into this? Because that is your beat, your focus.
Right. I haven't heard any metrics by any means of any kind of ratings or buy rates or anything that it's necessarily going up, but I can just speak to the quality of the shows. They're very logical. You're always going to see some good in-ring action. For instance, Saturday they had Slammiversary, which is that's their number two pay-per-view. They do about four pay-per-views every year. And I think this is the number two. Bound for Glory, I believe, is slotted as number one. But just an excellent show from top to bottom. They had five title changes. It seems excessive, but worked. Trinity, who's arguably their biggest star, formerly Naomi in WWE, won the Knockouts Championship. Leo Rush won the X Division Championship. And if you haven't seen Leo Rush in a while, he's got a lot of confidence and really good. Kenny King won the digital media title, and a tag team called Subculture became the tag team champions. And Killer Kelly and Masha Slamovich are the Knockouts tag team champions. So we had five title changes on the show and two returns. Jake Something, who had been an Impact for a while, but his contract ended, returned on Slammiversary. And he's been doing really good in the indies. He wrestles here in St. Louis for Glory Pro Wrestling, and a great addition. He's a guy that's ready to break out, I think. And kind of a big deal for Impact was that Eric Young returned. He had signed with WWE, but apparently he got out of his contract from what I understand, and he is back with Impact. He teamed up as a surprise partner for the president of Impact, Scott D'Amore, who made a one-night return and did really well also. And so it's exciting to see. Alex Shelley's their world champion over there, so we'll see him. Their former champion Josh Alexander also returns, so a lot of returns, a big show, and pretty exciting time. We'll see Shelley probably defend against Josh Alexander coming up, and that's pretty exciting.
Cool. Darren, I will wrap up there unless there's anything else that you want to add.
That's it. If you want to find me on Instagram, you can find me at DKLSTL, and I have a YouTube channel. It's called Darren's Wrestling World. You can find some action figure reviews and stuff like that there.
Awesome. Thank you. Always fun talking WWE with you, Darren. And check out his Impact Reports at PWTorch.com Thursday nights, his pay-per-view reports when they occur, and his podcast, which on Lasso, covering Impact every week. Darren, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Excellent.